The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back!
That's a buzzer! Right here on 960theref.com.
What's up, 960 The Ref listeners? Sam Franco, Chris Brame, back at it again. Another edition of The Crossover Podcast right here on 960theref.com. That's where you find us, 960theref.com. You can also find us on iTunes. Subscribe, give us a review, a like, whatever you do on the iTunes application there to let them know that you like us, because we would greatly appreciate that. A lot to get to today on this edition of The Crossover. We'll talk Georgia football as they laid waste to Mississippi State and now turn their attentions to Neyland Stadium. We'll also talk about the Falcons, who might be the luckiest 3-0 team in the history of the NFL.
But they haven't even trailed yet.
No, they have not, which is bizarre, but they have been able to find ways to win these games. And what do great teams do? They find ways to win games. So that's what the Falcons have done right now. And we will touch on the latest scandal that has rocked college basketball and cost Rick Pitino his job.
And the AD at Louisville his job, too. So, what do we have now? Bobby Petrino is just running around up there unchecked.
Yeah, and by the way, Dave and I were talking about this on the morning show recently. Like, it was so weird how when you ask yourself the question, who are the slimiest coach? Like, who's the slimiest coach in college football? Who's the slimiest coach in college basketball? Oh, they're both at the same place.
Yeah, I mean, I would... With basketball, I think it's hands down it's Pitino or was. Football, yeah, I mean Pitino would be at the top of the list.
Yeah, for sure. Just weird how both of them were at the same place. So we'll get to that later on in the episode and how this has also touched an SEC school, Auburn, which shocks absolutely nobody, of course.
No, they're always into it, but I mean, I think we also have to say the assistant coach at Oklahoma State that got arrested, Lamont Evans, mm-hmm. The allegations with him stem from his time with Frank Martin at South Carolina, so they're not coming out of this clean either.
No.
They just went to the Final Four.
That is correct. So we'll get more on that a little bit later on, but first, how about them Dogs just absolutely obliterating Mississippi State on Saturday night between the hedges? Great performance all the way around from Georgia. Jake Fromm was great. The running backs played well. The defense just continued to be unbelievable. So much so that they forced Mississippi State to be a one-dimensional passing team. And we saw what happened when Mississippi State got down big and they tried to pass the ball. Two straight drives ended in interceptions for the Bizarro Bulldogs. So great performance all the way around from Georgia, and one that, you know, a lot of people thought that game was going to be closer. I mean, the line closed at like 2 or 2.5.
That's where it had opened. I mean, it was a weird week watching that line last week because it did open at 3. Okay. And at some point last week went all the way up to 7. But, yeah, by the time the game kicked off, it had gotten back down to about 2.5 or 3 points. So it was interesting, all the activity with that thing last week. But it was – I mean, I was just pretty much from offense, defense, special teams. That was the perfect performance for Georgia Saturday night. I mean, I don't think there's anything to nitpick about it. It was a straight-up domination, and I think you have to go all the way back to that LSU victory in 2004 for the last time Georgia had a solid on-all-fronts game like it had last Saturday night. But keep in mind, though, what happened the week after that LSU game in 2004 – a loss to Tennessee, so let's not let history repeat itself this weekend.
No, of course not. But one thing that I want to make perfectly clear, I wrote this in my game recap article on 960theref.com this week, and I will continue to champion this. As long as Jake Fromm is playing the way he's playing right now, you cannot disrupt what's going on, and you can't go to Jacob Eason even when he's healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see what happens when Eason does get healthy and what the coaches decide to do. But, you know, for now, we're at a point where Eason is still not 100%. He's still not ready to come back. And so, you know, there's really nothing to stir up there. It's just Fromm is going to be the starting quarterback. But, you know, at the end of the day, here's the worst case scenario as I see it is Georgia's coaches decide that Eason was our starting quarterback at the beginning of the year for a reason, and they go back to him, and if he struggles, then guess what? Georgia could just go back to Fromm.
Yeah, but what if he struggles and costs you a game that you could have won? You know what I mean?
Like,
why you would even bring that possibility up, because right now, the offense is running much smoother under Jake Fromm than it did at any point last season with Jacob Eason as the quarterback.
I mean, it is, but
there are some different circumstances, like the offensive line's playing better and things like that. But still, I mean, you just don't see those hiccups that Georgia's offense had with Eason running the show.
True, but I still think that the primary success for this season so far, I mean, we're getting caught up in the quarterback in the offense, mm-hmm. but the reason Georgia's 4-0 is its defense.
Well, of course.
And that's another thing Eason didn't have last season was a defense playing at the level that it is right now. If you go back and you look at Fromm's statistics at Notre Dame, if that was last year with Georgia's defense last year, then Georgia loses at Notre Dame this season. But the reason Georgia was able to survive and win that game in South Bend was Georgia's defense this season is just – I think it's the best defense Georgia's had since the Van Gorder days.
I'd go
early
that far
stages
too.
Of Rick's tenure.
Absolutely. Here. You're looking at like 2002, 2005. Those were really good defenses. They won SEC championships. 2007 should have been a team that won – an SEC championship, or at least had a chance to, unfortunately.
Well, and played for a natty.
That's very true as well. But, yeah, you look at some of those really good defenses through that time period, and this defense is as good, if not better, than those defenses. I mean, right now, the way that Roquan Smith, Davin Bellamy, and Lorenzo Carter are playing, the way that the defensive line is playing, and as soon as the defensive backfield gets Malcolm Parrish back for good, I mean, you got to feel even more confident about how they have been playing it. And Parrish did play against Mississippi State, not a whole lot.
Yeah, he was in there at the end.
Yes,
but DeAndre Baker had a pick in that in the game.
Baker's pick was great too because he totally read what Fitzgerald was doing, and he kind of dummied Fitzgerald into it because he broke on the route as soon as the ball was thrown. And then the great tip from J.R. Reed to the jumping interception there by Dominic Sanders, who tied Kirby Smart on the all-time list of Georgia players with interceptions.
So, yeah, and had Baker not slipped, he probably would have taken that thing to the house. We would have had a knot. Georgia ended up scoring on that drive anyway, so they were able to cash it in. But that was just – it was straight-up domination. And, Georgia definitely right now looks like it, head and shoulders, the class of the SEC East. But you still got to – I think you got to take a deep breath and realize, though, that the focus that Georgia had in that game, the importance of that game for Georgia, it's still going to be hard to match that week in and week out. And so much of college football, it is. The schedule means it matters so much, and it's about when you catch teams and when teams catch you. And that was no doubt, that was a perfect, perfect spot for Georgia last week, being at home against Mississippi State and a Mississippi State team that had come off just a thrashing of LSU. So now what Georgia has to be careful, because they're kind of in the position that Mississippi State was in last week now, is to avoid going on the road and getting upset, as would be the case here. I mean, Mississippi State was an underdog last week. I mean, the difference would be Mississippi State came here last week and played a much better team than Georgia will be going to face this weekend in Knoxville.
Yeah, can we just go ahead and say also that LSU is not a good football team?
Yeah, I mean, I think as the dust continues to settle on the season, that 30-point win might not seem as impressive as it did at the time. But still, I mean, you beat LSU by 30 and you're Mississippi State. You're going to revel in that all week. And I think that was a scenario that just set up well for Georgia to do what it did last Saturday. But now to go on the road in Knoxville and just to think that you're gonna come out with that same focus that they had last Saturday night, it's going to be tough to do again. And I mean, I'll just sit here and you'll take a win no matter how narrow it is at this point.
And you mentioned how Mississippi State's win over LSU might not look as good as the season goes along. Georgia's win over Notre Dame is starting to look better and better the way that team is playing.
Yeah, I mean, it's still holding up. And, hopefully the Irish can make that continue to hold up. I guess, at this point now, I guess we've gotten to the stage where if Georgia now just handles its business the rest of the way and gets to Atlanta with no more than one loss, you'll have a crack at Alabama. And if somehow you can beat Alabama – then
you'll be in the playoff.
You're going to be in the playoff. It doesn't matter if Notre Dame loses every game from here on out.
And look, Georgia is probably going to be favored in every game but the road trip to Auburn for the rest of the season.
Yeah, they'll be favored now in the cocktail party. Mm-hmm. They're favored this week. They'll definitely be favored against Missouri.
I mean, right now, they're favored by 7.5 at Neyland Stadium. Like, when does that happen?
And again, that's I would just be careful, though.
That game's probably going to be a lot closer than people think.
Exactly.
Because it always is.
It doesn't feel like it should be. I get it. I mean, Tennessee just barely beat UMass, and we thrashed Mississippi State.
Remember the Pig Howard game where he fumbled through the end zone, and that's the only reason Georgia won the game? I think Georgia was a pretty decent-sized favorite for that game, and Georgia probably should have beaten them a lot better than they did.
Yeah, well, we had a big lead in that game and that's kind of been a theme with Tennessee lately, is big leads that we've let get away. The last two losses to them, we've had 17-point leads, haven't we?
And yeah, the one at Neyland a few years ago.
And then last
Nick
year's
Chubb
game.
Got hurt.
Last year's game, we were up 17-0. And then in that game that ended up going to overtime when Howard fumbled out of the end zone, we were up big in that game. And they
came exactly.
Back.
So Georgia just needs to take care of business against the Vols and go into Neyland and you know, just do what they've done all season, that business-like approach. So,
well, you know, we've had, like, disaster plays. Last year, they sacked Eason in the end zone. He fumbled. They got a cheap touchdown that way.
That was pretty much the play that won. I know that they won on the Hail Mary, but that play, I think, is the one that probably overall won them the game.
Yeah, and the game – the Pig Howard game that we did end up winning, though, when during their comeback run, they blocked a punt, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a special teams disaster. We had an offensive disaster. So they've had a lot of knots against us. And so far, with the three phases humming along the way it has, Georgia's avoided any of those catastrophic mistakes.
So big game in Neyland Stadium this weekend. And hopefully the Dogs, just like I've said, go there, take care of business, and not have any of those typical things that happen against Tennessee happen, so that they can just keep on rolling as the season goes along. We'll jump now to the Atlanta Falcons, who I mentioned a second ago might be the luckiest 3-0 team in NFL history. You know, if it hadn't been for Jordan Howard dropping that ball in the Bears game at the goal line, basically, then, you know, they probably win that game. And then this past weekend, just a very strange finish to that game where the Lions had like a first and 30 or a second and 30 at one point. And then a defensive holding penalty negates that.
Yeah, the 5 yards automatic first down.
Right.
Ridiculous.
Which is ridiculous. And then Desmond Trufant has that holding call or the pass interference call in the end zone that puts a ball in the one. So there was a whole lot of weird stuff going on in that game. Matt Ryan throws three interceptions, although he really threw two interceptions. I mean, one of them was completely Mohamed Sanu's fault. The ball hits him right in the hands. Yeah. And it just pops off his hands. And
was that the pick six one?
No, the pick six was Ryan just threw it right at Glover Quinn. Or he threw it in that direction, and Quinn jumped the route.
He just jumped the route, yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
So not the greatest performance on offense. But look, the Lions are a good football team. I don't think anybody is denying that. So for the Falcons to be 3-0 right now, I mentioned it earlier in this episode, great teams find ways to win games in any way, shape, or form. And that's what the Falcons have done so far this season.
Yeah, and the Falcons have won two tough games on the road, which isn't easy to do, and it's weird. Like, you feel like some Falcons fans now you're like worrying about Atlanta being 3-0, but it's like a flimsy 3-0 because they could easily be 1-2, as if the Falcons should be blowing every team out that the Falcons play. It's like, it's the Falcons, and they're 3-0. There are two undefeated teams left in the NFL, and one of them is the Atlanta Falcons. When your MVP quarterback throws three picks in a game on the road
and
you
still
win the game, to me, I'm like, I don't know. Where are they going to lose? If they don't lose that game, then what game are they going to lose?
No, I agree with you. I think that Falcons fans should count themselves very fortunate that the Falcons were able to come back and win that game, even though your MVP quarterback did throw those three interceptions. And the Falcons' defense, even without Vic Beasley, is still playing very well. They got the goal line stand. Thank goodness Brian Poole got his hand on Golden Tate there before he went to the end zone. And some were like, well, that's just a crappy, unfair way to lose a game. It's like, well, even if you didn't have the 10-second runoff and that had never happened and they had counted him down before he got into the end zone, that would have been 8 seconds for them to get up, either spike the ball or throw a play. I mean,
they could have done it.
You think so?
Yes. In fact, they even pointed out that they did it last year against the Vikings and had to actually cover 23 yards to get downfield in 7 seconds and get another play.
So you think they could have done
it? They could have done it. And
I don't know. It's tight.
that's like a crummy way to end a game.
It is.
And
but it's the letter of the law.
Well, it is. I'm not. I mean, the Falcons, they applied the letter of the law, and the Falcons didn't get a cheap win or anything like that. But that is something I think the NFL should go back and revisit, that your officials mess up the call. I mean, the officials said they gotten the call right.
Oh, they said it was a touchdown when it wasn't. Yeah.
Well, but had they said no, it's not a touchdown, he was down, and the Lions had the chance to get up there and run another play, then I believe
maybe one untimed down.
Right.
But
then I mean, I get it. Like then from the other team's standpoint, you're like,
mad.
Well, they would have had a rush, and now they get a chance to set up.
Yeah,
but still, I mean, I still don't think the game should end because the officials screw something up. If the officials if the officials missed a call, and then all of a sudden you're telling the other team, like, sorry, not only did we screw that up, but also now the game is over.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from there. There's no question about it, but it's definitely – something that Falcons fans have been talking a lot about. And it's like, look, you're 3-0, just enjoy it. You've got the Bills coming in to the Georgia Dome this weekend. That should be a game Atlanta wins to get to 4-0. And if that's the case, I mean, you're looking at a team that's 4-0 and has three wins already over the NFC North. You know, it's funny. The Falcons, a few years ago, had all their like opening games against the NFC East, I think all four of them, and they won all four of them.
Yeah.
So they were like the NFC East champs after like week four. You could be whenever the Vikings game is, you know, you win that one and you've swept all your games outside of the division, or at least in the division that you're playing against that season. That'd be very impressive. And that Vikings team, even with Case Keenum last week, did a number on the Bucs. So that's a team you're going to have to look forward to facing later in the year. But right now, I think the Falcons they're the class of the NFC, and they continue to find ways to win, like I said. So you've got Devontae Freeman still playing very well. You've got Tevin Coleman. I mean, Tevin Coleman had a huge reception down the sideline in that game against the Lions. And Julio Jones, maybe a little banged up. I mean, that hit he took where he landed on his shoulder did not look great.
Right, but they're calling it a lower back injury.
Right. So I don't know exactly what, but it looked like he landed like right on his shoulder, and it looked terrible. But hopefully he's okay. And I just think this team overall is playing about as good a football as they did on their run last season. I mean, you don't want Matt Ryan throwing three interceptions in a game, but the defense looks better than they were last season. They look more experienced, even faster. You know, Deion Jones still playing very well. Devondre Campbell seems to be more of a presence on defense this year. Duke Riley's had some good moments. And even Tack McKinley got a sack last week. So that all of those things are, as Mike Smith used to say, arrow up for the Atlanta Falcons.
And the next four games are against the AFC East. He's got the Bills, the Dolphins, then go to New England and the Jets.
I mean, you should win. You should pretty easily win three out of those four.
Absolutely. And I know you'd look at, well, the game at New England is going to be the toughest to get. Patriots right now have given up the most points in the NFL. They've given up 95 points.
That game could turn into a shootout for sure.
Well, yeah. So that's why. Are they going to stop Atlanta's offense?
I wouldn't think so.
Right.
So,
but and the next two games, I mean, Buffalo this week, then you get an off week and get to play the Dolphins.
If you lose to Jay Cutler, there are some serious problems.
Sure. And, I mean, I've been pointing out the schedule the Dolphins have leading up to that, where they played in L.A. 2 weeks ago. Last week, they played in New York. This week, they're playing in London. Next week, they'll play in Miami. And then they've got to come up to Atlanta. So, it's – I mean, they're just they're zigzagging everywhere. And then – the Falcons are going to be coming off a bye. It's like the Dolphins have no chance to win that game. Not that they'd have a good one anyway, but
the Falcons need to take advantage of these next 4 weeks. You know, if you win that game in New England, great. If you don't, whatever. But
they should be 6-1.
Absolutely. If you lose to the Jets, the Bills, or the Dolphins, that's not good. Those are teams you're better than, and those are teams you need to beat.
Yeah, they should be 6-1 going into a game in Charlotte against the Panthers.
If you're 6-1, you're pretty much guaranteed to go to the playoffs, barring some sort of epic collapse.
Yeah, I mean, you would then need to win four of your last eight games.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so basically go 4-4.
Exactly, and you wouldn't have even played a division game yet against a Saints team that looks terrible, against a Bucs team that had a pretty good game against the Bears, but they looked really bad against Case Keenum, and a Panthers team that doesn't really look all that great either.
Yeah, they just lost to the Saints.
Right.
And their offense, even when they were 2-0, but they had played the Bills and the Niners, and their offense had been bad in those two games.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you can't move the ball or score against those two, then you're going to struggle against just about anybody else.
Yes, you've got problems, as they say. So that's our wrap on the Falcons. hopefully they continue to play well. And as we said, at least go 3-1 over the next four games to put themselves in a good position for the remainder of the season after that. We'll jump now to this college basketball scandal, which has rocked the NCAA and rocked some programs, including Arizona, Auburn, Oklahoma State, Louisville, and I'm sure that there are some other programs that have not been named yet. As soon as the birds start singing, that may be impacted by this as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of college basketball coaches probably squirming. But I will correct you, no longer should Auburn be referred to as Auburn. They're now University One from here on out, as they're described in that, I guess, in all the affidavits and whatnot that were released by the FBI and the U.S. attorneys. But, and again, keep in mind, the coach currently at Oklahoma State, the allegations against him stem from his time at South Carolina. He was an assistant with Frank Martin at Kansas State, then went with him to South Carolina. So, I mean, to me, South Carolina's kind of deeper in this maybe than Oklahoma State is. So there's two schools in the SEC. And aren't those are two of the schools Georgia plays every year twice, right? Auburn and South Carolina in hoops.
Yeah, that is correct.
Yeah, and so, the Gamecocks just went to the Final Four also.
Oh, imagine that. And, you know, Frank Martin, you know, this new and improved Frank Martin that doesn't scream on the sidelines anymore and all that stuff. Yeah, give me a
right.
break.
Well, and you look, okay, I mean, Sendarius Thornwell was, he was a kid from South Carolina, but then, I mean, their freshman point guard last year was from, like, the Bronx.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've all of a sudden, they've got this national recruiting profile. And, you know, and you'd like to give them the benefit of the doubt and say, like, well, that has to everything. It's that arena they built.
Oh, yeah.
That arena right. they built. Now you wonder, well, like, oh, maybe it's that or, you know, working these shoe companies and taking these bribes and whatnot. But it'll be an interesting time and thing to watch. That's for sure. The feeling I get, though, is like this is basically the government now doing the NCAA's dirty work. And because I get the sense this is less about the, you know, the idea of fraud, bribery, money laundering, and more about just it's the amateurism and how these amateur athletes are getting getting shuffled off to these different schools and shoe contracts and even with agents.
Yeah, and according to sports director of WAVE-TV in Kentucky, it looks like Tom Urich, the AD who got fired at Louisville, was asked to fire Patino. He refused, and so both were fired.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, so he didn't want to fire Patino?
It's like, dude, you don't want to save your job?
Yeah.
Also, I'm seeing something from Patino's contract. Employer has the right to terminate this employment contract for just cause or impose other appropriate discipline, in which case, prior to such action, employees shall be given 10 days prior written notice and an opportunity to be heard. The term just cause with respect to employer's right to terminate the employment contract shall be understood to include you know, a bunch of random stuff, but apparently if it is 10 days, then, you know, we may be dealing with this for a little while longer, but I wouldn't assume so, because from what I've seen on Twitter and everything like that, he has indeed been fired.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure, too, when it comes to the lawyers will get involved and figure out whether or not they owe him money, how much money they owe him, if the school can wiggle off the hook with that just cost thing. I mean, it did strike me last night that Patino issued a statement, and the statement was issued through his or by his legal counsel, and it didn't come from the school.
Right.
So, you know, the lawyers had already been getting involved at that point. But, yeah, I mean, it's certainly not surprising when you heard that stuff yesterday. But how in the world was Patino going to get out of this? I know he claimed, I had no idea what was going on, but it just got to the point where, okay, it legitimately, if we want to believe you and trust that you didn't know anything about the hookers you were using to recruit players, the fact that you paid now $100,000 to get this kid Brian Bowen at the time that you were being put on probation. I mean, 2 weeks after that, after their probation was announced for that previous thing, they were paying $100,000 to the family of Brian Bowen to get hit. And if you want to say, I don't know anything about it, well, then that's at the point, that's just as bad as not having any idea that your program is being run this way and you're the head coach is just as bad as if you were deeply involved in it, which, by the way, he was anyway, even if he wanted to pretend like he wasn't.
Yeah, now I'm seeing all the tweets come through. Barrett Salih from CBSSports.com. Bobby Petrino is currently the most stable aspect of the Louisville Athletic Department.
Yeah, but boy, now, I mean, he gets to run wild up there.
Yes, he does. Who knows? Yes, he does. So if you're a Louisville fan, well, unfortunately, it's all starting to hit the fan right now. But, I mean, the crazy thing about all this is that it's unfortunate that student-athletes continue to get exploited by bigger, larger entities here. You know, the NCAA and the amateurism model, say what you will about it, has been something that is, for what it's worth, been exploiting student-athletes for a long, long time. And now you've got, because of that system, because the athletes want compensation and because these are 17 and 18-year-old kids that are being tempted by all these outside factors, you have a system in place now that yields to stuff like this.
Well, yeah. I mean, the NCAA is what has created this black market for coaches to have to go out and try and recruit through these various channels because, you know, the idea of this amateurism, which, by the way, for the NCAA is whatever it wants it to be because, you know, the reality is, and not to get all like, you know, Webster's Dictionary, but these players aren't really amateurs because they are getting something in exchange for their athletic prowess. It just happens to be the fixed price of college tuition. But the more and more you see that these schools commit NCAA infractions and are giving money to these prominent five-star players, it just it proves, as much as you know, people would deny it and colleges will deny it and the NCAA wants to try and deny it, but these guys do have this individual market value, as much as some would like to pretend that it's about the name on the front of the jersey and not what's on the back of it. But these schools want to give these players money. How do I know that? Because they continue to. And here's the case with this recruit, Brian Bowen, who Louisville gave $100,000 to, and it's just that's because, I mean, they do have individual value. And it's and it shouldn't surprise us that there is corruption. And, I mean, this is college athletics. It's a billion-dollar industry now, so of course there's going to be corruption in it.
Yeah, exactly. When the feds got involved, you know what happened, right? The NCAA was probably doing this investigation, and they were like, we can't handle this.
Exactly.
And so they went and blabbed to the feds about what was going on and got them involved because, look, now that this is out in the public, this isn't an NCAA investigation. This will be dealt with pretty quickly.
And now that's the thing. Like, do we want assistant basketball coaches getting arrested and going to jail over stuff like this? Like the government's involvement in it? But yeah, I mean, that's what it's the NCAA that has, it doesn't have subpoena power. It struggles to conduct these investigations. It spreads so thin because there's so many of them. So yeah, I mean, I do believe that this really does. This has less to do with all of the law stuff about money laundering and fraud and bribery as much as it is that, you know, it's amateurism. That's
exactly
what this investigation is about. And I'm like, I mean, I don't know if that's really something that, you know, I want the FBI and the Justice Department involving itself in.
What needs to happen from all this is the NCAA needs to take a long, hard look in the mirror and try and figure something out. Try and open a dialogue, create a discussion, and figure out what they can do to stop stuff like this from happening.
Well, I mean, this is like their latest attempt at it, whether it will or not. But
this isn't going to do anything. You're still going to have shady characters.
I know, yeah.
You know, what you need to do is figure out a way to help the players out more so they're not going out and seeking stuff like this.
Well, I mean, listen, they already know that there's a way, but the reason they don't want to is because it would eat it. Look, if the players started getting paid, then the coaches, the ADs, guys like Mark Emmert would start making a lot less. Because the money already exists to pay the players. It's just going to coaches, and it's going to ADs, and it's going to these. I mean, you just look at the size of these football staffs, the way that they've ballooned over the years. I mean, I guarantee there are some athletic departments that probably have like bigger staffs than the White House does.
Look, Rick Pitino was the highest paid basketball coach in the country in college. He was making $7.7 million, including $750,000 Louisville had to give him on July 1st as a retention bonus. So, I mean, this guy is not hurting for money, and he's going to be fine in that regard, but he's a slime ball, and it's finally caught up to him because when there's so much smoke around a program, eventually something bad is going to happen, and this is what is
right.
happening.
And I agree. He is a slime ball, but the way he was operating because that's the system in place that the NCAA has created. But because you know what Louisville could have done instead of giving hookers to recruits or going through being bribed by shoe companies to pay a recruit? What if they had just been able to say, here's $100,000? If they just, right? Because I laugh sometimes when people get so, like when that Demetrius Robertson, when Notre Dame rode that 18-wheeler all the way down to Savannah.
I saw that 18-wheeler on campus when I was there for the game. I wanted to take a picture of it or something, but I just didn't. But I was like, hey, I wonder, because I don't know if it was the same one, but I saw an equipment truck like that from Notre Dame. I was like, I wonder if that's the one that showed up in Savannah.
Yeah, but people are like, oh, recruiting has gotten so out of hand with the with what these schools do to try and market themselves and appeal to recruits. And you know why they do that?
The system breeds it.
Right. The reason they have to do stuff like that and bring out all these ridiculous gimmicks is because they can't just give them money. So, yeah, as sleazy as the stuff that Louisville was doing, they were doing it because they couldn't just simply do the alternative, which is offer 5-star recruits money. So instead, they're having stripper parties in dorm rooms and then – the situation here where they've got an agent that's giving money to an assistant coach, mm-hmm. and they're bribing him with a shoe company and promise for this, and here's $100,000 to your family. But people are like, it happens. I mean, it's always corrupt, and I'm not surprised by it. And it's like, well, you're not put off by it, kind of being, operating with this black market. But then the second you suggest, hey, what if there was this other system in place where Louisville could have just given him $100,000? And
might be a little too.
No, we can't have that.
But look,
it's amateurism. Yeah.
Bottom line, though, the system is broken. And I know we're about to wrap up here, but I just have to say the system is completely broken when stuff like this continues to happen. But the NCAA, as you've been alluding to, just kind of ignores it and sweeps it under the rug because they don't want to give up their autonomy. They don't want to give up that we're going to make all of this money and not have to share it with anybody.
Yeah,
but they do.
But they're the reason that black market exists that's led us to what happened yesterday.
Absolutely.
Because they've decided what they want amateurism to be. And truthfully, it's not even amateurism because the athletes are getting something in exchange for their athletic services. It's just all these schools have come together and colluded to fix that price at college tuition.
Mark Emmert, Oliver Luck, all you people sitting on your high thrones in Indianapolis, you should be ashamed of yourselves.
Well, it's like Ron Polk said, NCAA, no clue about anything.
Absolutely. So that'll wrap things up on this edition of The Crossover. Thank you so much for listening. You find us every week on 960theref.com. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. Listen to The Morning Show with myself and David Johnson, Monday through Friday, 6 to 10 a.m., and the home team with Brame here and Jeff from 4 to 7 p.m. And I guess that's really it. We don't have anything else to say. So we'll check y'all next week, hopefully after a Georgia win, hopefully after a Falcons win, and hopefully after all of this slime on college basketball has been at least started to be cleaned up.
No, there'll be more of it.
Yes, there will be.
That's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yes, there will be. So we'll talk to y'all next week. Thanks for listening to the Crossover Podcast right here on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame on 960theref.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.